with Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Seven minutes after the hour of 5. Yes, this on Good Friday and the drive home at 5. Yours truly, Curtis Lewa, taking you the rest of the way. And it's interesting because as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, pumping out the 50,000 powerful watts of sound, it is a day in which more Americans are eating fish and Mrs. Paul's fish sticks than at any time of the year because of Good Friday. And they are ordering more pizzas, meatless sauce, of course, than any other time of the year. And I would ask some of you, just as Weisenheimers, as I always am, is to go to your local pizzeria. You know, you're going to have your slice and a Coke, or you're going to order a pie, and tell the person behind the counter, it's probably an Albanian pretending to be an Italian, that you want the pie, the slice pie, that you don't want a pie that he's going to make up and put in the oven because it's supposedly you get a better deal with that, but it's smaller than the slice pie. So really become a curmudgeon and insist that you get the slice pie, which is bigger than the regular pie, which it shouldn't be. But anyway, a little fact. I figured I would relate to you on Good Friday. But if you go through the corridors of Northern Boulevard in Queens, Little Koreatown, or down 32nd Street, right here in the shadow of the Empire State Building, huge Korean business community, there is concern and worry in the air from many who had fled from that area a long time ago, if they're old-timers at the time of the Korean War, or if they're new Jacks, they've heard the stories of their parents or their grandparents, and they're wondering, what will the evil seed of Kim Jong mentally ill be doing behind the kimchi curtain of North Korea? And so I'm not an expert on this, but Gordon Chang certainly is. He's regularly featured on the John Batchelor Show that you can listen to at nights here on WABC from 9 to 1. And he's a resident expert on everything dealing with the Euro-Asian continent. Thanks for joining us again, Gordon, here on the drive home at 5.
Oh, thanks so much, Curtis.
Okay, so clearly there is going to be a celebration for the evil seed of Kim Jong mentally ill's grandfather. Am I correct, this coming weekend?
Right. Tomorrow is the 105th anniversary of the birth of Kim Il-sung, the founder of the North Korean state. And as you point out, he's the grandfather of the current ruler, Kim Jong-un.
What kind of ceremony is this usually involve? How long does it take place? And what have the leaders tried to do there before in order to enhance the celebration?
Well, this year, like all years, there's going to be a massive military parade through the center of Pyongyang, the capital, and especially through Kim Il-sung Square, which is the center of the city. Before the event, North Korean leaders like to do something provocative, and especially because Kim Jong-un, the current ruler, has, I think, an unstable regime, he's going to want to do something to bolster his position. But I also think that this year might be a little bit different, Curtis, and that is, if you'd asked me before Thursday night whether he would set off a nuke to demonstrate his power, I would have said extraordinarily high percentage that he would do so, because they've already completed all of the initial preparations for the device. It's been buried into a tunnel. They've sealed the tunnel. They've done everything that's necessary except for Kim Jong-un to give the order. But I think that President Trump's missile strikes on Syria unnerved both Kim Jong-un and his important sponsor, Xi Jinping, the ruler of China. So I'm not sure that they're actually going to go forward with the detonation now, largely because they're worried about what Trump might do to them.
All right, but does that mean they won't fire off this test nuclear blast at some point? Let's just say they decide, okay, we'll save it for a better day.
Yeah, if they don't set it off in the next 24 hours, they will save it for some time. And there's an overriding reason for that, and that is the North Koreans sell this stuff, and the Iranians will want to make sure that the North Korean devices actually work. So there will be a sixth test at some point. Now, most people think it'll be within the next 24 hours, and I can't say that they're wrong. But because of what President Trump did Thursday night and also last night with the detonation of that mother of all bombs in Afghanistan, I think there's a real chance that these guys have been intimidated by the American leader.
All right. But the Red Chinese, if we listen to our president, Donald Trump, he says that, well, you know, the president of Red China is cooperating more than he would have anticipated. Is that true or not true?
Well, for the last two or three days, Xi Jinping and China have been cooperating more than I anticipated. And that's because I think that they're really scared. I think that they themselves feel they do not understand Donald Trump. And until they get a better understanding of him, I think that they're actually going to be quite tame. Now, in the past, Curtis, the Chinese have put on great shows of cooperation while we were paying attention. And when we didn't, they went back to their default position, which is supporting the North Korean regime to the hilt. So unless President Trump actually spends his time thinking about North Korea all the time, I think China's going to backslide.
Well, in fact, earlier, General Mattis, the head of our Pentagon, had this to say about the North Korean situation.
We're working with international partners in order to defuse the situation. But the bottom line is North Korea's got to change its behavior.
And when he says international partners, who is he referring to?
Well, he's referring, of course, to China. But more important, he's referring to our allies in the region, Japan and South Korea. And, of course, he's referring to other countries that back us up on North Korea. And those countries, not all of them are in Asia. So, for instance, NATO helps us and gives us expressions of support. So it's essentially most countries in the region do not want to see the North Koreans test.
All right. But the president himself, when asked about that mother of all bombs that was released into the hills of Afghanistan to get into the cave-like structure of ISIS, as to whether it was a warning sign to North Korea, this is what he said.
I don't know if this sends a message. It doesn't make any difference if it does or not. North Korea is a problem. The problem will be taken care of.
So now when the president says the problem will be taken care of, Let's hypothetically imagine that 2 weeks from now, the evil seed of Kim Jong mentally ill decides, I'm going to test that nuclear device in that mountain where it's already been secured. Then what does Trump do?
You know, that's a great question, Curtis, because everyone wants to know the answer. Certainly, Xi Jinping, ruler of China, Kim Jong-un, ruler of North Korea, more than anybody else, those guys want to know. You know, I think that what we'll see actually are more sanctions, because we certainly have not imposed all the sanctions we could. We may even see a quarantine on North Korean trade. There's all sorts of things that we can do that are not kinetic, but which would be extremely effective, including imposing costs on China, because China's been supporting North Korea's ballistic missile program, its nuclear weapons program, and it's been involved in North Korea's other illicit commerce. So we've got to deal with that. And so far, you know, his two predecessors, Bush and Obama, were not willing to take on China for supporting North Korea in the most dangerous ways.
But if, in fact, the North Koreans set off that nuclear device and the president does respond either with Tomahawk cruise missiles in combination with B-52 bombers coming and dropping their payload over the North Korean peninsula from nearby Guam, what then will the North Koreans do based on your knowledge of their mentality and their inner structure?
Yeah, I think in that case, they probably would cause problems on the peninsula by probably invading South Korea. Because if they felt that this was the end of their regime, they were going to take people with them. And so Seoul, which is a city of about 25 million, including Gangnam, by the way, which is the southern port of Seoul, they're going to invade it, and the casualties will be horrific. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think that we'll use kinetic means unless we absolutely believe that we have no other choice.
Now, when you say invade it, there's the DMZ, there are troops fornicating one another on both sides. So you're saying the North Koreans would be able to smash through both the American troops and the South Korean troops defending the DMZ?
Oh, well, we have very few troops on the DMZ, but yes, they would be able to smash through them. They probably will get to the outskirts of Seoul. We will drive them back because the U.S. and the South Korean militaries together, along with our friends in the region, like the Japanese, are just going to overwhelm them. But nonetheless, it's going to be a horrific fight. You know, we've been involved in wars where we measure casualties in the low thousands. We'll measure casualties in the hundreds of thousands in the first couple hours of a war on Korean Peninsula. Most of them civilians, but nonetheless, there will be Americans. And so this is a matter of life and death for the United States, and we got to be careful about it. But on the other hand, we can't be intimidated because the North Koreans do mean us harm, and we've got to stop their ballistic missile program and their nuclear weapons program.
Do appreciate that. That's Gordon Chang, regular contributor to the John Batchelor Show that you can listen to every night from 9 to 1. And we're counting down the clock to when that nuclear warhead may be released in that test area in that mountain range of North Korea.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
Maybe the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
We keep it suit up. Bottles don't wanna dance on board, they keep it trued up. I'm gangster when I pull my fuerza. Devils wanna cry to big homies and try to get a sweat up. I'm 76 deep in the game. I'm going insane. If you bottles wanna bang,
26
bang.
On the drive home at 5. This is a We Be Thugging update about the Uzi toting, dope sucking, psychopathic, machete swinging killing machines. And I added the machete swinging because we're talking about MS-13. This is a group that has become a plague to Suffolk and Nassau County over the years. But I first engaged back in the mid-80s when starting the Guardian Angels in Los Angeles, and they were an emerging gang force representing the El Salvadorians who were fleeing the Civil War and coming into a predominantly Mexican community where they were working for less and they were being taken advantage of by the Mexican gangs. And they were a lot shorter and more diminutive than the average Mexican. So they were being turned into speed bumps. So what did the El Salvadorians do? They did what every other ethnic group has ever historically done. Formed a gang to protect their own. And then soon as they became powerful, they started shaking down, extorting, and racketeering their own ethnic group, which is how MS-13 has risen and become so powerful. It isn't through drug dealing or gun running. They'll dabble in that. But what they do is they shake down and they're involved in racketeering against their own peeps in the immigrant community. But they've also used murder as a means of getting across not only to outsiders, but internally within their own paramilitary ranks that snitches get stitches and end up in ditches. And we've been focused on the most recent killings that occurred in that park in Central Islip just about probably about 72 hours ago. And that's right on the border with Brentwood, which has had its fair share of MS-13-related killings, as have other communities out in Long Island, in Hempstead, in Huntington Station, in Riverhead. It has become a plague. It has become an epidemic. And too often, law enforcement has been a dollar short and a day late. And one of the things they're not doing, as they suggest at times they would do, is to work cooperatively with an agency that has its fingers on the actual veins and arteries of MS-13 in the means of how they get back and forth across the border on a regular basis from Guatemala, Honduras, and from El Salvador. And that is LIMIGRE, Immigration and Naturalization Service, and ICE. And since both the town of Brentwood and the town of Central Islip have declared themselves to be sanctuary villages in a county that oftentimes acts like a sanctuary county, Suffolk County, they have had a limited impact in dealing with the massive number of law enforcement personnel who have been assigned to the task of reining in MS-13. Well, we now have all four bodies that have been identified in Central Islip. And there is no doubt in anybody's mind that this was attributed to MS-13. It has all the markings, all the hallmarks of an MS-13 execution squad, bringing these young men into the back of the park, pulling out their machetes, and then beating them senselessly with bats, and then chopping off limbs and ears and other parts of the anatomy as a signal to all. Snitches get stitches and end up in ditches. And I have guardian angels out there because we have chapters in all those areas I've described in Suffolk and Nassau County, especially in Brentwood and now in Central Islip. And I will tell you this, if you're going to get control of MS-13, as Newsday says, law enforcement is now taking them extraordinarily seriously as they have declared all-out war on them. What you're going to have to do is when you arrest them, you're going to have to contain them in a separate detention facility. You can't mix them into the population in either the Nassau County Jail or the Suffolk County Jail where they now rule. They rule the tiers, not the Bloods, not the Crips, not the Latin Kings, not even 18th Street, their competitors, the Mexican gang. And you've got to get control of MS-13 over in the Eastern District at the federal lockup on Sunset Park, Brooklyn, where they have actually outmaneuvered and outmuscled and outmachoed the Bloods who used to run the tiers in that prison. And secondarily, when you find them guilty, you got to make sure they do maximum time in solitary confinement. Again, not letting them integrate with the general population because that's where they'll continue to recruit and that's where they'll continue to gain strength and become stronger. And then eventually export them when their time is completed or their sentence back to their country of origin. And you have to work cooperatively with law enforcement and the militaries in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador to track them, bag them, and tag them, and make sure they don't become a menace to society there because I guarantee you, as has occurred over and over again, they will come back here. Build a wall, build no wall, they will come back here because MS-13 has the resource to figure out other ways to smuggle them back in. And that's why this is an unusual kind of update because I got boots on the ground. I've got experiences with MS-13 that few, if any, have ever had, especially in our neck of the woods.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
Really trying to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
West Comorien, Asma, Huya.
Five 40 as we continue in the drive home at 5. And there's continual reverberation from the decision that President Trump made to send 59 cruise Tomahawk missiles into that air base in Syria following the chemical bombing attack against a Syrian village by the forces of Bashar Assad. And there's a woman, Kanta Ahmed, who wrote a piece about how this was the U.S. reclaiming the role as the moral arbiter of the world. And she joins us here on the drive home at 5. Thanks for jumping on board again, Kunta.
Thanks very much.
Okay, so why do you think by this one action of firing 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles at an Air Force base that essentially had been cleared out because the Russians had been warned an hour in advance of what was going to happen, that somehow that allows us to reclaim the mantle as the moral arbiter of the world?
I think it restores our sense of ourselves in that there is only so much inhumanity that we can tolerate witnessing. And I would have welcomed this decision several years ago if President Obama had made the decision when, remember, the President of France, François Hollande at the time, was ready to make airstrikes for exactly the same kind of atrocity. So I think as a civilized society, as an advanced society, and as the world's prime superpower, if we allow things to go unchecked, this emboldens others. I'm not suggesting that one strike is going to resolve the chaos in Syria, but this is the first indication that Russia has that anyone will challenge them. And I really commend the leadership for actually doing this.
But I thought the focus is the total annihilation and destruction of ISIS and al-Qaeda, who are just some of the many militias who are battling Bashar Assad, who also hate us. Would it be much better to work together with Russia and Assad to destroy those enemies who are our enemies than also to make Russia and Bashar Assad an enemy of us?
To me, Bashar al-Assad is a war criminal, and the only place he belongs is the International Criminal Court in The Hague, and he should be seen to be punished. I find him an obscene entity. I don't think there is any place for a civilization like the United States to have relationships with someone of that cause. Recall, the United States intervened in Bosnia and intervened in Rwanda. Too late, but we did intervene. We don't negotiate in this sense with the leaders and hand them power. Even think back to the Shoah. The United States was slow to get in to respond to the Holocaust, even refusing to bomb the railways on which Jews and other people were taken to their deaths in concentration camps. But at the end, we entered the war and we defeated this. I think we need the same result. And we've also seen, with respect, Curtis, what has happened in the last 7 years. While we have been dilly-dallying, having meetings in Venetian palaces, what has it accomplished? 500,000 people dead. So no, I think first, there now has to be supremacy and power demonstrated through a military intervention. And then when we can enforce a ceasefire and create no safe zones, we can begin to see who is going to lead Syria. I don't think it will be clear, and perhaps something can be structured where it will become an international protectorate.
All right, but Ghanta Ahmed, that hasn't worked well in Iraq for us or Libya. We took out the strongmen, we took out the dictators, and chaos ensued. There was no one to replace them.
I understand that. But also, Bashar al-Assad is barely in control of his own strip of Alawite territory. And he's only able to do that with the strong arm of Russia behind him. I think that Russia has to be pressured tremendously to say, that's enough. Russia can install another puppet there if they like. It cannot be Bashar al-Assad. And I think there has to be an international peacekeeping force that goes in there and provides a governance. It may be an international governance that's between Russia and the United States.
Now,
but it cannot go over to Assad.
We're a long way from that.
We're even waiting for the United States to agree that we can take any more active role than we can now. And in the 7 years we've lost, Russia has become very, very emboldened. And that is not good for Europe or the United States.
All right, but you mentioned all those who have been killed, injured, and displaced, the many refugees.
Yes.
Are you now suggesting that since the president has opted for a softer tone when he saw those dead babies, those suffering babies from the gas attack, that maybe he consider liberalizing the refugee flow from Syria into the United States to take care of some of these families?
I think the United States, according to my last reading, is already committed to taking 50,000 Syrian refugees once this pause is over, because they're reviewing the process. But I actually think the damage is already done. More than half of Syria's population has been displaced across the world, most of it in Europe, some of it in other countries. And what is most urgently needed is a place locally near Syria, within Syria, which is guarded, which is protected, where people can start rebuilding some of their lives while we restore the peace. So if this is tied to, yes, we're going to make a priority for Syrian refugees, I would advocate for that. But that's kind of taking care of the aftermath. What we need to do is get right to the nidus of this. And I don't think it can be done without getting our hands dirty. And that will involve, I think, an air confrontation with Russia if they do not back down.
Do appreciate that. That's Ghanta Ahmed. She wrote a piece for Commentary. It's called U.S. Reclaims Role as Moral Arbiter of the World. I suggest you go online and you read it in full detail.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Those who practice like you.
Deep into the headlines. Deep into the streets.
This is good.
Deep into your eyeballs.
Disgusting.
Studio View is live right now. WABCRadio.com.
My two youngest sons, Carter and Hunter, you know, they come from Hebrew school. I'll have my visitation on Sunday, and they'll be singing this song, and I'll say, enough, enough, enough. But on the line, to sort of like get some synergy to the song and to what's just happened with the Pesach Seders, particularly the ones from Monday night and Tuesday night. It's our own Noam Bladen. He is our news director here at WABC, but also the host of the show that precedes Imus in the Morning from 6 to 9. It's the Noam Bladen show, and it's on from 5 to 6. It's a great show, but he's also a proud Jew, a very liberal, progressive, and I think kind of a socialist Jew, but a very proud Jew. So thanks for joining us again, Noam. Yes, hello. I guess with that introduction, he's out of sight, out of mind. You know why he's not on the line? It's the disqualificator. And he's calling from the hipster and millennial capital of Jersey City. And this is Good Friday, and he probably knows he's talking to the Gentile, Curtis Sliwa, and it's time to hide under the Castro convertible, under the slipcovers, because he's thinking, maybe I'll declare a pogrom. Maybe I'll have flashbacks to a different generation. But anyway, let's see if we have him on the line. Hey, were you hiding under your Castro convertible because you're talking to Gentile boy here today on Good Friday, Noam Bladen? Noam Bladen. I guess Mike Coscarelli's talking to Noam Bladen, but we're not talking to Noam Bladen. So let me try to get through this. Noam Bladen was engaged in hosting a Seder at his own home there in the Heights in Jersey City, which one time used to be pretty dicey. You know, used to be a lot of like, wow. It's a little rough up here. But ever since Noam Bladen decided to invade that neighborhood, the hipsters and the millennials have come in there in force. And it's interesting because his family and friends, when they were at the Seder table and they were having first the Pesach lamb and the matzah and then the bitter herbs and the romaine lettuce, and they were talking about the trials and tribulations that that, in fact, Moses was having in leading the promised people, the Jews who had been enslaved in Egypt, to, you got Noam Bladen on. Hey, thanks for circle jerking me here. Hey, Noam, what were you, hiding under your Castro convertible because I'm Gentile boy on this Good Friday?
Yeah, you know, I was on John with all that matzah, you know, it gets you after a while.
So tell us what happened at your Seder.
Yeah, so, you might not be surprised to hear the people of the Jewish faith, most of them not big fans of Donald Trump. And so at the Seder, you know, you tell the story of the Jews leaving Egypt, you know, leaving enslavement and going to the promised land. And what so many Jews did this year is they changed the story around, and instead of Pharaoh, who's the evil guy, they turned it into President Trump. And so I was at a Seder where it was all about President Trump.
Forget the story of Exodus out of Egypt by the Jews. And we all remember that from the movie. Charlton Heston was Moses. Are you there, Noam? You see, this quantificator. You see, you guys, you're real numbnuts on the other end of the line. I'll kill both of you on the other side of this bulletproof glass. But anyway, I'll finish the story. They insinuated that Donald Trump was like Yul Brynner in that famous classic movie where the 10 plagues were issued by Hashem, God the Father, against the Egyptian people, which then forced Yul Brynner, a.k.a. Pharaoh's hand, to acceding to the urgings of Moses that he let his people go. And as you know, they then escaped through the Sinai Desert, not far from Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt, came through the Red Sea, and Pharaoh and his army started trafficking after them, and then just got swallowed up in the Red Sea. And the Jews were lost in the desert for 40 years until they find their way. Meantime, Jesus Christ, who was a Jew at the time, was lost in that same desert for 40 days, not 40 years. So maybe that should be the story of Good Friday. Oofah!